Hey, Tiffany Stratton here from the WWE SmackDown. Tiffy time can be crazy, y'all, and when I get a break, that means it's Chumba time. Chumba Casino has hundreds of online social games and new titles landing every week. There's always something fresh to try, and the daily boosts make Chumba even more fun. They're little epiphanies that make my day sparkle. Ready for a fun way to switch off and take some time for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Anybody, anywhere.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome into Take Command with Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson. Logan spent a decade in the NFL. You can check me out on 106.7 The Fan from 2 to 6.30 each and every day. The roster was just announced as we record on Sunday evening for your Monday commute. So we want to go through the Commanders 53-man roster in great detail here, try to get into some of the decisions that maybe came down to the wire. But big picture, I would say, I guess storylines include Trey Amos to injured reserve. So he's going to miss the first four games of the season, which feels like a huge deal for a guy that was kind of week to week. You, of course, have Luke McCaffrey, who was battling for a spot, winning out. Wide receiver 7 over Van Jefferson. Ethan Kaliakmanis makes it as a third quarterback. We weren't sure if that would be the case. I don't think there was a surprising cut. The guy that maybe I liked the most that ended up on the scrap heap was Ale Kaho, the linebacker who had a good camp and good preseason. They also had a super heavy competition at D-tackle and a couple guys who balled out in the preseason. You know, Shy Tuttle, Byron Cowart, and Maurice Hurst all got cut. I guess paint with a broad brush, Logan. Your thoughts? Those are some of my initial takes, but what'd you make of the roster formation?
Yeah, I mean, those were all the kind of the big, big major battles kind of heading into that third preseason game. So it's kind of nice to kind of get them all kind of settled. And I do think that it's important to remember that this, while is the initial 53, is not the final 53. Like, obviously, they got to get some guys to IR. They got to kind of probably find some people in free agency after every other team makes their cuts. I'm sure there's somebody that's going to be available. And they're going to kind of finish building this thing out for 2026. That includes not only the 53-man roster, but the guys they're bringing back for practice squad. And so I'm really glad you mentioned Kaho, because he's a guy that, you know, did some good things in the preseason. Not as good as last year, I didn't think. But again, a guy you want in the program, I think, to develop. And I think that's one of the benefits of having this larger practice squad roster, where you can keep a guy like that, you can develop him. But to me, the big surprise in looking at the initial 53-man roster, Grant, is we're just talking about is the offensive line. I mean, I really am surprised that both those young guys made it. You know, Goldman, I thought, had a really, really, really good camp at center, specifically kind of when he was, you know, in the preseason games. I did a lot of good stuff. Obviously, the joint practice was a little bit up and down for him. But then I think the other guy, Togi, I liked him. I liked how he was playing. I liked the physicality that he brought. But I never thought he'd make the 53-man roster. And I think it just shows you kind of their perspective on the interior depth to keep a guy like that at this juncture. And again, we'll see what happens, obviously, over the next couple of days. But you mentioned some really good ones there, Trey Amos, Luke, AK, all those ones you mentioned. But I do think that that might be the biggest surprise of the initial 53 for me.
Yeah, it's the weakest part of the roster. I mean, just not to sugarcoat it. Like, for Goldman to make it is not a stunner, because he was a draft pick, and their draft picks often make it. But he didn't do anything necessarily that says, I have to be on the team. And then Togiai getting in as a UDFA is even crazier, right? But I think that tells you the whole story there. I mean, I was shocked. We're going to get into each position group one by one here, but just to kind of paint with a big brush on the O-line for a second. I was stunned that they weren't one of the teams that traded for a center today. There were three center trades, and I would have lost a lot of money, Logan, if you told me Washington wasn't one of the teams bringing in a center. Now, I don't know enough about the players that got traded or how much better they are than, say, Julian Good-Jones, who Washington cut, who may end up still in the building on their practice squad. But, you know, I just keep kicking the can down the road and giving Peters the benefit of the doubt here that he's got a vision, he's got a plan, he's going to figure this out. The original thing we heard was that Good-Jones was going to compete with Allegretti for the starting job. And I think we have enough intel now to say that that was never really, whether it was the plan or not, maybe it was not a good plan. It was not reality. And center's really a mess right now. So they have to find someone on the waiver wire. My guess is they've got someone that they're thinking about. Maybe you've already reached out to an agent or whatever, but I would say center's weak. and guard depth is a little bit weak as well. So they got to keep maneuvering there. If you're talking about this being the first of a few 53s, they can't be done on the interior offensive line.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I went back and I was like, oh, someone good will get cut, or one of these guys traded has got to be a good player. And I went and looked them up, and I think it just speaks to how hard it is to find a quality starting five. You know, guys that have experience, guys that have the physicality, the right makeup. And so, I don't know, I just look at that and I kind of say to myself, like, is it surprising they didn't trade for? Because I will say this about Adam, he's been very selective about people and players that he trades for. And I think in a good way. I think when you look at the free agency period that we just went through, like, he targeted people that fit a very clear defensive vision. And he's not just going to sign kind of someone because it's a desperate need. He's going to be very specific. And so I do think that it will be on this roster that isn't on the roster currently. I don't know who that is, but again, it's just one of those spots, right? And this is just more of a league kind of conversation. Offensive line in general, the development there has been poor, I'd say, for the last 5 or 6 years. And so it's just hard to find like good quality starting caliber people, I think. And so to your point about Golbin, I think he played well. I don't know if he's ready for the bright lights. I think Togiai actually played really well. So he's maybe the most intriguing guy of that group. But again, I think to your point, it just shows that they're not, the lack of depth there is apparent, and they need to figure something out.
But that having been said, you couldn't start Golbin against the Eagles and feel okay about that.
I don't,
right? They need Allegretti to come back, obviously. But like, do you disagree with my point on Golbin?
No, that's kind of what I'm saying. I think he did well for a sixth round rookie. I think he did well, but there's a difference between doing well and then starting week one against Philly. And yeah. I think one of the reasons you give him what it was something crazy. It was like 45 reps in the joint practice, have him start every kind of first and second team clip there in terms of the practice, is to see what he's got. And, you know, everyone kind of talks about the struggles that the offensive line went through. And, you know, Connerly talked about it. Coleman talked about it, working with new pieces, getting things targeted, the snaps over the head. You can tell the pressure was high. But I'm not saying at some point this year he can't start, but I just would be very, very reluctant, very cautious. Reluctant's the wrong word. Very cautious about starting a rookie center week one against a defense like that. So that's where, like, kind of, and again, even if you did feel comfortable, like, you know, which I guess there is a world, because you have another couple of weeks to get ready for Philadelphia where you feel like he's in a good spot and you feel like you can insulate him and you're ready. You just need another spot, you know, because if Allegretti doesn't play and Golbin starts, who's your swing interior person, right? I mean, Wiley could probably play guard, but you definitely don't want Togiai to do that, right? So there just needs to be another piece here, irrespective of how you feel about Golbin at the moment, which again, I think we're aligned there. Like, I would be a little bit, you know, reluctant to start him week one, because not because he didn't do the right things, he didn't handle the process well. It's just a big lift for a first-year player, you know, first game of the season.
Yeah, I think the interior O-line is where Peters is going to have to do the most and the best work over the next couple of weeks. And one of the things I'll be asking him, I don't know if you know this, but I'm having an event with Adam Peters on Thursday night coming up at Arlington Draft House called An Evening with Adam Peters. I'm hosting it with my co-host on The Fan, Danny Ruye. In fact, if people want to go to the event, tickets are on sale at arlingtondrafthouse.com right now. But it's going to be basically just like an hour plus of Adam talking all about the roster. That's actually what I want to drill down on, is kind of what happened, what was the plan, and is the vision still the same on the interior of the offensive line? But why don't we dive into IOL here for a second and just the O-line in general. We're going to go through all the groups after 53 cut down. But Tunsil's going to IR. He's one of the nine for the moment. Brandon Coleman, Chris Paul, Nick Allegretti, Sam Cosmi, Josh Connerly, the five starters, and then Wiley, Golbin, Togiai. So you only kept Wiley, who's tackle, guard, flex, Golbin, guard, Togiai, guard. And I would assume then that DJ Humphreys would be the other one, right? That he would be the extra tackle and kind of the ninth guy. So the question becomes, what are they hunting for? And do you think a decent enough center becomes available that player pushes Allegretti before the start of the year? Or are they just trying to find a backup better than Golbin to Allegretti?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question and one that I don't have a great answer for. Obviously, I think the Humphreys thing is a good indication by you. Once you get Tunsil to IR, you get Humphreys up on the roster, and all of a sudden the depth there feels pretty good, because I think you've got a really nice, flexible piece in Wiley. Like, he is the reason that I'm not totally panicking at the moment, because I think he can play left and right guard. I think he can play right tackle. He can't snap, but I think you've got good depth there with him. And he's played a lot of football, and he's played well when he's had to play. So that's the thing that's kind of keeping me from, like, really pulling the alarm bell here. But the other thing too is like you just need more experience. And so like that's the thing is I don't know if there's going to be a player that comes available that's going to have a combination of Allegretti's experience and his ability to kind of, you know, settle in, be the leader of that group from the center spot in terms of someone that's going to be available on the waiver wire. So I don't have a good feel, you know, like the market seems like it's not super saturated right now with guards and centers. So I'm just really curious to see how the thing plays out.
Yeah. To be clear, Humphrey's in as your like swing tackle, left tackle, maybe.
Yeah.
Riley tackle guard flex. Then you've got Golbin backup center. Togiai is like an interior guy who can play multiple positions. I think when you add that backup center, Togiai goes to the practice squad and maybe you add two guys. That would not surprise me. They right. can play center. You know, and then Golbin goes to the practice squad as well, maybe. But we'll see what Peters can figure out there. No surprise at tight end. They did keep four. Chigakonkwo is going to be their leading pass catcher. John Bates, their leading blocker. Colson Yankoff's got exceptional hands, had a tremendous camp. I didn't think he had as good a preseason as he did a camp. And it got quieter right. as camp went on, which was interesting. But I still really like the player. I like what he turned in on the practice field. He can play special teams. And then Ben Sinnott is the other of the four here. That's going to have to get in where he fits in. He's the one guy of the four that can do a little bit of both. You almost can put Chig into the receiver bucket, Bates into the blocking bucket. Yankoff's not a blocker, but a receiver. Sinnott can kind of do a little bit of both, you know, at an above average level.
No, I think you're right. This was maybe the most pat group, most stock group of the offseason, right? Because it's like Yankoff seems like he's going to make it. Sinnott's going to do his thing. And then Bennett and Chig, or Bates and Chig, excuse me. So, like this one to me was like not surprising. And even though, like you're right, Colson didn't quite have the same number of explosive plays as we got deep into the teeth of camp, into the joint practices. Like it's the special teams value that keeps him as the fourth guy on the roster. And so, like I do think it allows him again to have a role on Sundays. But then there's a developmental arc for him too. Like there are times where you're going to have maybe a package for him, an offensive series for him, whatever that thing looks like. And can he continue to foster his growth as a tight end? So, yeah, I think that's an easy group. I think that's pretty stock. And I like, and I feels like a really strong group. I like what I've seen from Chig. I like what I've seen from John since he's been healthy. So, and when John was hurt, I think Ben Sinnott did a great job blocking in line. So I like your analysis there. And I, again, this is a group that I have a lot of confidence in just from a depth standpoint and everyone having a very clearly defined role heading into the season.
We said if they kept seven with receivers, which we've been predicting for couple of weeks that they'd have to go light elsewhere. And I think running back is where they ended up going light. We'll come back to wideout, but running back just three: Bill, Rashad White, their third down pass catcher, and then Katron Allen. Now both Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt and Rashad White have actually been hurt. I guess they're not overly concerned about either, because you couldn't have kept just three running backs if there was a chance that one of those guys would miss week one. Jeremy McNichols is going to be on the team, but is going to be on injured reserve designated to return. So he'll miss the first month or so. And I would have to imagine that Robert Henry ends up on the practice squad, or maybe you have a couple of RBs on your practice squad. You can elevate those guys as need be. But what do you make of just the three running backs? It really does put some pressure on Bill, who's been off injured in his career, to prove more durable.
Yeah, I think it definitely shows that they have a lot of confidence in Bill being healthy. It shows they have a lot of confidence in White being healthy, which is something like in this land of like who's injured and who's not. Like, you know, at the top of the show, you mentioned Trey Amos, where we were kind of speculating that maybe the injury was more serious. Like they've kind of shown their hand saying he's going to go to IR. This is, again, showing that they feel comfortable that Bill will be healthy and ready for week one. Same with White. I do think that Katron Allen has shown a very positive running style and can find some rotational work here. But the thing I'd keep an eye on here is like, where does he find value on teams? Like, is he returning kickoffs? Is he doing something with punt return? Not returning punts, but is he blocking on punt return? Is he blocking on kickoff? Because I think you need three running backs active. And the one thing that I haven't seen an exceptional level of performance in is his ability on teams. I'm talking about Katron Allen. So that third spot is interesting to me. Because again, I think his running ability and vision is above average, but he's not going to get a lot of touches. So how does he handle that role as the kind of special teams rotational guy that McNichols has done such a great job with the last couple of years?
His best preseason performance was the first one that they had going back to the opener and when he really had himself a bit of a field day.
You talking about Allen?
Yeah.
I actually think his best performance was Detroit, to be honest with you.
Did you? Okay, I want to hear why. But my point was going to be, I've been largely unimpressed by him, which is not to say I've been disappointed. Like, I think he's been actually very solid. I just, like, we talk about this a lot. This is not a Grant Paulson running back. This is a plotting, very much a, like, if you block three, I'll get three kind of guy. What have you seen from him that you like? And then go into why you think what was a poor statistical game against Detroit was the best game.
Yeah, so I think the thing that, you know, as a blocker, the thing I appreciate is they're a back that can make my job easier. And so, like, when I'm watching the tight ends block, and so I played with a guy when I was in Chicago. His name escapes me at the moment. Gosh, I feel bad because he's a really good dude. But he did a great job of, like, let's say it's an outside zone. I'm really pressing the outside number, and we're in a little bit of a stalemate. Like, he's anchored me down. I can't move him off the spot. He would do a great job of attacking the defender's outside shoulder, so the defender would have to move his feet to set up the tackle. And then once he started moving his feet, I could leverage the block and kind of drive him out, and he would cut right off my butt. And so he was making me better as a blocker by being an extremely consistent runner with his landmarks, setting up cuts, running off of butts is the thing I like to say. And so in that game against Detroit, like, that's when I saw Catron do that the most. Like, there was not a lot of daylight in those runs going back and watching the all 22. And they've got a nice little kind of old school buck sweep to the perimeter. He's setting up the kick out. He's kind of dipping inside. He breaks a tackle. He falls forward for four, right? And that is a skill. That is a skill that is very, very valuable in my opinion. Now, again, he did some good things week one or the first preseason game. But the Detroit thing has showed me an NFL level, an NFL running back level of vision, contact balance, and understanding the direction and physicality of the run. The other thing it showed me that he could set up blocks. And like I just said, like, I think that is a tremendous skill. So I actually think after watching him and Henry back to back, like, he was my guy to make the team because of that skill set. So Jordan Howard, there we go. Thanks, Evan. Yes, Jordan Howard was the guy there kind of making me feel good about myself. Funny enough, everyone called him Fatback when I was there because he was a big running back and kind of had a slow.
Oh, you're kind of guy.
Yeah, so, but he did a great job making me right oftentimes. And I think there's a little bit of that to Catron Allen.
Yeah, 13 for 34 in the preseason for him, 2.6 per. Yeah, as he went on, he lost a fumble at the end of the preseason.
Wasn't great.
Obviously, it was like a yard per carry against Detroit. But that's interesting. And that's the subtleties of kind of why you come to take command is Logan's, you know, he'll watch the tape and he'll see something that I'm not going to. But yeah, I thought he probably made the most people miss and broke the most tackles in that first game, which has got to the second level. That's kind of what I'm looking for. Having said that, I would have kept him over Henry for sure. Like, I didn't have an issue at all with that. Mm-hmm. It was a no brainer for me. I just, you know, I think Bill should get the bulk of the work. What I hope is that this turns into the Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery thing. And he's not quite ready for those lights yet, but I hope that he can become Chris Rodriguez as the year goes on. Like, that's what I'm looking for. I just think Rodriguez probably has a little more juice. We'll see, but I want to see a little bit more in terms of, you know, Rodriguez is kind of jolts some of the speed, some of that stuff. We'll see if Allen has that. Wide receiver. They kept seven. No surprise here on the top of the roster with McLaurin, Diggs, Williams. We talked about Burks having a great camp, forcing his way in. Lane was going to make it as a punt returner. The questions on the back end were De'Ami Brown. That was solved. We didn't have to worry about that riddle when he didn't play against the Ravens. He was clearly in. Luke McCaffrey over Van Jefferson. Now, this one's interesting because you can disagree with any of this that you want to, but here's kind of my analysis. I think Van Jefferson's a better wide receiver right now than Luke McCaffrey. And if it's as simple as like that, then Van Jefferson should make it. But it's never that simple. Luke McCaffrey does way more on special teams and was on the first unit covering stuff the last week of camp. He was an excellent kick returner, one of the league leaders on kick returns last year, and he's younger. And I look at their receiver room in terms of layering moving forward. Diggs is on a one-year deal. Burks is on a one-year deal. De'Ami's on a one-year deal. McLaurin may or may not be going into his final season, depending on what happens at his age with his extension that he signed this year. So it just makes more football sense to me to break a tie by keeping a guy that you're investing in who's younger, who does more with teams like Luke around as a depth receiver. If you're going to play one of these guys in week one against the Eagles and need him to go catch six balls, Van Jefferson's the answer. But that's not really what's happening, in my opinion. So that's kind of how I saw this. How did you see it?
No, I think I see it exactly the same way. I think the thing we've talked about, you know, we talked about it with Colston, we talked about it with Catron Allen, is when you're at the bottom of your position group, and I'm not saying Luke's the worst player, worst receiver on the team. I'm just saying like he's the bottom of that group. You got to play teams. And when you look at kind of the special teams portions of practice, when you look at him in the preseason, like you mentioned the kickoff return ability, but he also does other things. You know, he can block on kickoff. He can block on, he can cover a kick if he has to. You know, there is a, he's not like dynamic, but he's a very solid special teams player. And so I think having that ability coupled with, I'm going to say some flashes early in camp. And, you know, Grant, it's kind of funny. The same thing that happened with Colson where he was kind of, you know, flashing early. There was some explosive plays. I thought Luke had some similar stuff early in camp. Then he got really quiet as we kind of got near the end of training camp, into the preseason. So, but I think there were some flashes last year too in terms of explosive opportunities down the field. So I think he's a young player. I think he adds a ton of value on teams. I think he'll be up on game day, which is really important. He can help your team returning kicks, which is also super important. So I think that's his role. And I think ultimately that's why he beats out Van Jefferson, because I agree with you. I think Van Jefferson is and was more productive as a receiver throughout camp and throughout minicamp and OTAs. But that's not really what we're looking for here with this seventh receiver spot.
How about the consternation about wideout? And I know they signed Diggs, which changed everything, but that's maybe their best roster position right now. I mean, yeah, I think Jaffrey last year was running routes and catching balls when he was healthy, and he was an important, like they needed him to make plays. Right now, he's the seventh guy. I mean, it says everything.
Yeah, I think you see it with the offensive line. Like if Tunsil's healthy, I think you feel great about that group. You got Tunsil, you got Brandon Coleman, who can play kind of a swing interior role, like Chris Paul can play guard. Like the dynamic can change instantly with one player. And I think you're seeing that here with the receiver room, because all of a sudden, like you said, it went from one that people had a ton of questions about to now people have these really clear, defined roles. You got Diggs and Terry kind of as your, 1-2. You got Antonio Williams, who's coming on in an explosive way. That Detroit game was so fun to watch from him. Burks, who's kind of this traditional X body type. Lane, the return specialist. Diami, the vertical merchant. Then Luke, who's also a special teams guy. Like, it just feels like a really well-built receiver room. And it's one guy. One guy makes the difference. And I think that a lot of the stuff we were talking about with the offensive line, think about how much of that would be solved if Laremy Tunsil was starting week one. It would feel so different in terms of depth. So yeah, one guy can make all the difference for sure.
Yeah, I would still have center questions, but your point about the completion of kind of the roster, at the whole discourse would change. I mean, you have a top five player at the position protecting the quarterback's blind side, and then Coleman.
This is the thing I think it gives you, though. I'm sorry to cut you off. I think it gives you this. Like, if Brandon Coleman is starting at left guard and Tyler Grady's hurt, like everyone talked about his ability to play center. What if he was playing center? Would you be worried about it? I wouldn't
Not
be worried
nearly
about
as
it.
Much. No. I mean, so, I would be
and then
fine.
Chris Paul would play center, Cosme Bright guard, Connerly, and all of a sudden you're like, but that's what having a left tackle like him that relegates Brandon Coleman to that. Not swing player, because I think he'd start left guard, but a great depth rotational piece on the inside gives you. It's one of those funny things, man. Like one guy can make all the difference with some of these rooms.
It's a domino effect for sure. All right, let's get to quarterback really quick to wrap up the offense. We're going through Washington's 53-man roster they released on Sunday evening. The question here was, beyond Daniels and Mariota, who they've said throughout would be ready for week one, would they keep three, or would Kali Akmanis, Hartman both be released, one or both go to the practice squad? And they kept Ethan Kali Akmanis on the roster, which is a pain in the butt to do if you're the Commanders. It's not ideal. It's not what you want to do, but it tells you they don't think they could have gotten him through waivers. And this is something we talked about last week on Take Command, and I talked a lot about on my DC show, Grant and Danny. The way he played against Detroit became a national storyline. I mean, Dan Orlovsky was breaking down tape on him on NFL Live. When you have a drafted quarterback and a guy that played some games people saw, even though it was at Rutgers, and then he balls out in a preseason game like that, you turn a couple of heads. Now, the athleticism's limited. There are major questions about what kind of quarterback he could eventually become. But that almost doesn't matter as much as, would someone claim this guy? And if you don't think so, I get that. I'm with you. But how often do seventh-round quarterbacks go in the fourth round? Do fourth-round quarterbacks go in the second round? Do two, three-round guys go, 10th overall? Everyone just overvalues and, they're going to value that position at 140 cents on the dollar because everyone's looking for QB depth. So I guess they just didn't think they could sneak him to the squad. And then now the question is, do they keep Hartman in the building to have four in the program, or is this the end of the road for Handsome Sam?
I kind of think they keep him in the building. I think, and I may be in the minority here with Sam. I want to talk about Kali Akmanis. So we'll talk about Sam in a second, but with Kali Akmanis, like, I just think like How many preseason games have you watched, Grant, where you're like, this is not NFL quarterback? A ton. Right. I've watched a ton, right? You're like, this is like, we can't do this. But when you see Cali McManus roll to his right and rip a 50-yard bomb down the field that's overthrown to Antonio Williams, you're like, we got action, coach. We got action. There's a reason, right. There's a reason Joe Milton's still a quarterback in the NFL. It's because he has all the traits in the world, right? Those traits, you can't just go out and find somebody like that in the street. And those guys get opportunities. And here I just compared one of the freakiest quarterbacks in the league to AK. I'm not – that's a bad comparison. But
I get the
basically
point.
What I'm saying
he did a thing that kind of makes you go, huh, he's got something.
Right. And when that happens, the league, everybody goes like – it's like, you know, when you like you take that raw meat and you throw it out and the dogs are outside, they all go, what's that? They're like, what's going on? Because again, not everybody's got those qualities. And so I think that's – when he started making some of those throws, I was like – this is going to be tough because like, even if he does it in practice, it's quiet, local markets talking about it. But the second he goes and shows out and everybody's like, oh, who's this guy from Rutgers? Oh, that was
what's
great,
funny
bro.
Is he didn't do a lot of that in practice. In fact, before the first preseason game, I was like, this dude is going to be thrown to the wolves and they're letting him play in a preseason game. Like he got no reps. He never really showed anything. I didn't think. And then the lights came on. I was like, he's a little bit of a gamer. It was the second preseason game against Detroit when he lit it up. And I was like, damn, that's not the same guy I saw on the practice field. But they obviously didn't think they could get him through.
And it's the same thing that you talked about. It's like, you know, all these old scouts, and you've met these scouts on the road. Like I meet them at the combine every year at the Senior Bowl. You got the dip in and they got their notepad and they're writing down. And you better believe the second those dudes saw this guy rip some of those throws from the pocket with good footwork, good base, like nice arm angle, they were like, oh my gosh, like what am I going to do with myself? We have to find a way to get that guy in the building. Because as simple and as limited as the package was, that skill set plays. And there are so many times when I'm watching college quarterbacks for the draft show every year that I do, when I'm like, he can't do it. He physically can't do it. And so when you find one of those that is even a possibility, it's like, let's bring him in. So I do think they would have had a tough time getting him to practice. I know that sounds insane, but I think they would have had a tough time getting him there.
So then real quick on Hartman, you said you're in the minority. So that makes me wonder if you were about to say an insane thing. Were you about to say that you would put him on the practice squad, or should we just, because if you're going to say that, we could just go to break.
No. So yeah, I was going to say that.
All right. Time for break. No, I'm just kidding. Why would you do something so foolish?
Well, it's so funny. Like, so like we're good friends. We talk a lot of ball, right? And I know
yeah,
how you
we
feel
do.
About
we like
Sam
each
Hart.
Other.
But there's guys that I talk to that are like in football, like coaches, former players. And everybody that I talked to was like, and we all have the same reaction. And so you have your reaction, which is like, this is ridiculous. Get the hell out of here or whatever. But all these guys.
To be clear, well, I'll give you mine in a second. I'm not that crazy about it.
But. Yeah, no, I'm being a little facetious here. But they all are kind of like, we all kind of are in a, you know, we're getting food after the game or whatever. We look at each other and we're kind of talking through the game. It's like, did Sam Hartman play good? And you're kind of like, I'm expecting to get ridiculed. And they're like, yeah, I think he played pretty good. So there is this weird kind of football cult that's like, he's on time. He's pretty accurate. He's in the rhythm of the offense. And I've played with quarterbacks like that. You know, there are archetypes of quarterbacks who played like that with less than stellar arms that can just manage offenses. And I saw shades of that. Now, does that mean I think he can go out on Sunday and win football games? I'm not there yet. So to me, he's a practice squad guy, but this is the best preseason he's had since he's been here. And I think that's where I'm at with him.
So it is, right? It should be. It's been 3 years, right? So let's start with that. The other thing is, this is going to, I'm not a Sam Hartman hater. He's very handsome. If they're just going to keep him around to be Jaden's buddy, that's perfectly fine. They could do that. It's just a practice squad spot, whatever. I really don't care that much. But I guess the part that annoys me is they didn't let him play last year in December.
Yeah.
When the season was over and nothing mattered. The whole day is about Sam Hartman. You can't remember anything about that game other than the Bill run because it was so irrelevant. And they signed Josh Johnson off the waiver wire to come in and play. And then they didn't even let Sam Hartman be the backup. They said, nah, if he goes down, we're definitely not letting you come in then, Sam. We would never do that in December in a lost season. We're going to sign Driscoll to be named later. Is it Travis or Jeff or Tom? I don't even remember. But the point of the dude's story is they did that, not me. That's what they told me about Sam Hartman in December. Then they drafted a guy in the late rounds to be the project, the thing that Sam Hartman was, to be the guy that if the plane hit the mountain in a lost season, gets a couple of games here or there, to be the long-term backup behind Jaden. You have him in the building already. So it just doesn't make sense. You want to talk about being in the minority? I would never have four quarterbacks. Ever. Yeah. What the Steelers are doing right now is a fireable offense, as far as I'm concerned. Keeping four quarterbacks on a 53-man roster is a joke.
Is that what they did?
Yes. They kept
They're all on the roster.
Yes. Wow. It's insane. I would never do that. So it's not a big deal at the end of the day, and I certainly don't dislike Sam. He is very pleasant, and I enjoy talking to him, and he's smart, and he talks ball well. But I just think, just make him an assistant quarterbacks coach. Like, end the charade.
So I'll say this. So I am with you, and I was with the team. Like, when it got into that late season run, it's like, there's no way they can play him. Like, the last time I saw this guy play, it was an abject disaster. Like, he couldn't manage the offense. He couldn't complete a pass. The arm strength just wasn't there. And we've watched practice, and then there's been times where I'm like, man, I don't know. You know, Sam is limited from an arm strength perspective. But I will say, when he got out on the field this offseason, he managed the offense. Cadence was good. Checks were good. The timing and rhythm of it was so much better than it was last year. So in the same way that AK got out there and was ripping laser beams all over the field, and you're like, who the heck is this guy? I saw a quarterback in Sam Hartman who could manage an NFL offense. Now, again, you said people overvalue quarterback stuff, and I'm in that bucket now. But I said, I've seen enough from him in this offseason, in this offense, with David Blau at the helm, to say if he got in a game, he could do the quarterback stuff, like manage the huddle, manage the play clock, do the things that AK struggled with, quite frankly. Like, if I had to start a guy tomorrow in an NFL game, this is gonna sound absolutely insane. So just, I'm ready for the pushback on this. I would put Sam Hartman in before AK because of how he does the quarterbacky type manage of the game stuff. Now, I think AK has a way higher potential and ceiling, 100%. So don't get it twisted here. And I think at some point this year, AK will surpass Sam in that regard. But there is something, there is some football value to that that is hard to explain to somebody who's like, man, height, weight, speed, let's let this thing rip. Like, and again, like, that sounds insane, and I'm willing to acknowledge that, but that's what I've seen from him this offseason.
Yeah, I just think when they didn't play him last year, that to me was the indication.
He got better. He got better.
You understood. Know what I'm saying? Understood. He, sure. I mean, you're not going to get worse, to be clear, but he did get better, and I congratulate him for that. They're never going to start him ever, 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 ever. They're never going to start him. So what is the point of this? Give me a linebacker who could possibly get on teams. Give me a corner. You have three active corners. We'll talk about that in a second. Like,
that is crazy.
There's just some other things that I would do at that spot. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter that much. And it's not worth getting all that excited over. But they kept three, and more importantly, Kalia Akmanis is on the roster. Let's talk about the defense next. The Commanders put their 53-man roster together. A lot more, I would say, has to be done on the defensive side of the ball outside of the center position in terms of some roster moves. We'll explain next.